Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the History Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the escalating racial violence that is carried over from the Red Summer of 1919, where 25 cities across the country saw racial riots occur in their communities. And I would encourage you, if you haven't listened to episode 33, that you push pause, go back and listen to that one so that you can kind of understand where we're going. Fast forward to 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're going to see violence occur in one of the wealthiest portions of Tulsa, and it just so happens to be the black community known as the Greenwood District. People in the community called it the Black Wall Street because of the amount of wealth that we see in this black community. Unfortunately, this will be the site of one of the greatest horrors in American history, known historically as the Tulsa Race Riot of 1921. It was the morning of May 30th, 1921. Dick Rowland, a black man, was hopping onto an elevator in the Drexel Building, which was between 3rd and Main Street in Tulsa. Suddenly, screams are heard coming from the elevator, and out runs Dick Rowland. Sarah Page, who was in the elevator with Dick Rowland in the Drexel Building, accused Rowland of assaulting her. Word traveled very quickly throughout the white community about the incident, and white rage began to set in, presuming guilt of Dick Rowland before he was ever given his day in court. Tulsa police arrested Mr. Rowland the next day and began their investigation. However, the newspapers there in Tulsa made the investigation almost impossible because white citizens began presuming guilt after they read the Tulsa Tribune's May 31st edition, creating an escalation in hostilities between the white and black community. White mobs began forming at the Tulsa courthouse, where they were calling and demanding on the police to release Rowland into their possession. Black mobs then arrived there to defend Rowland. Shots are fired within the crowd, setting off a violent scene at the courthouse that would eventually force the outnumbered black Tulsans to retreat back to the Greenwood District. In the early hours of June 1st, 1921, the white rioters went into the Greenwood District and burned retail centers, churches, and homes owned by the black citizens. What was more shocking was the extent to which the white mob went to destroy the Greenwood District. They even used air raids. Buck Colbert Franklin, called BC by his friends, was a black attorney who witnessed the massacre and wrote what he saw that day. "I could see planes circling in midair. They grew in number and hummed and darted and dipped low. I could hear something like hell falling upon the top of my office building. Down East Archer, I saw the old Midway Hotel on fire, burning from its top, and then another and another and another building burning from their top." B.C. Franklin would go on to write that the sidewalks were literally covered with burning turpentine balls. "I knew all too well where they came from, and I knew all too well why every building was burning from the top. I paused and waited for an opportune time to escape. Where, oh where, is our splendid fire department with its half dozen stations?" I asked myself. "Is the city in conspiracy with the mob?" At the eruption of the violence, city officials deputized several men to, and I'm using air quotes, help the situation. All of them white, of course, which only worsened the situation for those in the Greenwood District. These deputized officials were also given weapons and ammunition to use as needed. Governor Robertson eventually declared martial law, sending in the National Guard. These guardsmen assisted local firemen in putting out the fires in Greenwood, but more importantly, they also helped imprison all black Tulsans who were not already detained. Over 6,000 people were held at the convention hall and also at the fairgrounds for 8 days. The riots lasted for a 24-hour period, with 35 blocks being burned to the ground, over 800 people injured, and it is estimated that 300 people died. 1,256 homes were destroyed, along with virtually every other structure, including churches, schools, businesses, and even a hospital and library in the Greenwood District. Roland's charges were later dismissed, and it was even believed back in 1921 that he and Sarah Page likely were in a secret relationship. Not one single criminal act committed by whites were ever prosecuted or punished by the government at any level. Tulsa officials will eventually bring in the Red Cross, but initially they refused outside aid, which made it difficult to provide assistance to the black victims in this massacre. You see, their black hospital was burned to the ground by the white mob. White hospitals won't treat black victims. And so eventually the American Red Cross was able to work its way in to provide assistance to the black victims from this massacre. Paul Garduo, the curator for the National Museum of African American History and Culture, writes, "Survivors talk about how the city was shut down in the riot. They shut down the phone systems, the railway. They wouldn't let the Red Cross in. There was complicity between the city government and the mob. It was mob rule for 2 days, and the result was complete devastation in the community. The root of the situation was economics. In the state of Oklahoma, specifically in Tulsa, some Native Americans and blacks had become wealthy thanks to the oil industry booming in the early 1900s. However, before the boom, the land was deemed useless by whites, which is why these two groups were relegated to it. And then suddenly, when there's money to be made, they want them out." Black historian John Franklin, who happens to be the son of B.C. Franklin, explains, "That's what leads to Greenwood being called the Black Wall Street. It had restaurants and furriers and jewelry stores and hotels. And the white mobs looted these homes and businesses before they set fire to the community." According to Franklin, for years after the riot, black women would see white women walking down the street in their jewelry and snatch it off. It was the frustration of poor whites not knowing what to do with a successful black community, and in coalition with the city government, were given permission to do what they did over that 2 day period. Black Tulsans would eventually rebuild despite discriminatory laws from the local government, which stated that new structures must be built with steel frames, knowing that the cost of the steel structures would drive the destitute black Tulsans out of the community because they had no more money left after all the riots. Everything was gone, and B.C. Franklin knew this was a racial ordinance and he was going to fight it. And he took it all the way to the Oklahoma Supreme Court, where he would be victorious. And the Greenwood District would continue its rebuild. In August of 1921, Caleb Ridley, a KKK official, came to Tulsa and gave a rousing speech to whites there in the Tulsa Convention Hall, calling the massacre the best thing that could have happened to Tulsa, even stating that we might have to do it again. When he said the word "we," that led rampant speculation that the KKK was behind the events of May 31st and June 1st. 1 month after this meeting, the Ku Klux Klan opened its first chapter in Tulsa with 300 initial members. As the Klan grew in presence, those numbers would seem extraordinarily small. By January 5, 1922, 5 city leaders, including 2 oil industry executives, a prominent banker, and a state legislator, would create the Tulsa Benevolent Society, officially establishing the Ku Klux Klan as a legal organization in the state of Oklahoma. In August 1922, almost 2,000 Ku Klux Klan members paraded through downtown Tulsa, eagerly watched by over 15,000 white Tulsans. a year later in 1923, the Klan in Tulsa would boast over 3,000 members, which would make them the largest chapter in the Southwest and one of the largest in the United States. The reality is that the Tulsa Race Riot and many other race riots that occurred during this period will not be found in your U.S. history books. Your U.S. history textbooks won't have these events. My question is why? And if you're so lucky to have a textbook where it is mentioned, it's a little blurb. Why? I'll tell you why. It's because in schools we are indoctrinated, not educated about the real history of this country. White America doesn't want to confront its past, which is precisely why the systematic racism that exists in this country will never truly go away until white America confronts its past. Thank you for joining us. I hope you learned something. And always remember, this is more important than ever. Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Have a great day.